Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the National Press Club. Today's newsmaker, I'm going to keep the introduction very short since you all know who he is, and that'll leave some extra time for questions. We're going to have some microphones over here. We had said earlier that we'll pass them around, but instead they'll be stationary. So if you've got a question, it's probably best if you just line up right near the microphone and we'll adjust them for height momentarily. So my name is Donna Linewands. I'm the treasurer of the National Press Club, and I am pleased today that we have the Secretary of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff.
After you call an introduction that is short and sweet. Thank you. Thank you for hosting me here. Happy New Year to everybody. One of the biggest concerns we've had for the last several years, and we continue to have at the Department of Homeland Security, is how do we promote a secure form of identification across America? And Congress has spoken to this by passing the Real ID Act several years ago, which provides that we have the obligation to set uniform security standards for the issuance of state driver's licenses. When we went back and investigated the 9/11 attacks, one of the things which we found, and which the 9/11 Commission found, was that all but one of the hijackers carried a government-issued identification form, mostly driver's licenses. And this government-issued ID helped the hijackers board airplanes or remain in the country illegally. That's why the 9/11 Commission recommended that we enhance the security of our driver's licenses as a counterterrorism measure. And that's why Congress set higher standards for driver's licenses in the Real ID Act. That's also why the American people overwhelmingly support more security for driver's licenses. There are really three reasons why secure driver's licenses and security standards for driver's licenses make a lot of sense. First of all, as the 9/11 Commission noted in its final report, secure identification is an essential way of ensuring that people are who they say they are, and therefore, this kind of identification gives us a tremendous tool in preventing dangerous people from getting on airplanes or getting into federal buildings. Second, secure identification happens to be a very good way to prevent illegal immigrants from pretending to be American citizens so they can work illegally in this country. And make no mistake about it, identity fraud among illegal immigrants is a serious problem. It harms the legal worker, it deceives the honest employer, and it destroys the privacy and the good credit of innocent Americans every year. During fiscal year 2007, when we were conducting worksite enforcement operations enforcing the immigration laws, our immigration and customs enforcement agents made 863 criminal arrests and ended up charging more than 500 individuals with state and federal document fraud crimes, including identity theft and Social Security fraud. Third, secure identification protects all of us from the pernicious plague of identity theft. Last year, our Secret Service arrested over 4,300 suspects, including both legal and illegal workers, for identity theft crimes that totaled $690 million in actual fraud loss to individuals and financial institutions. Studies show that roughly 35% of these kinds of fraud cases involve the use of fraudulent driver's licenses or phony state ID cards. And in the year 2005, according to the FTC, identity theft cost American households $64 billion, and 28% of those incidents likely involved the use of a phony driver's license. So there are three categories of people who will be very unhappy about secured driver's licenses. Terrorists and people who want to get on airplanes and in federal buildings and avoid terrorist watch lists. Illegal immigrants who want to work in this country by pretending to be American citizens. And con men. And we're going to disappoint all three categories of these people by announcing today's final Real ID rule for driver's licenses. In accordance with the Real ID Act of 2005, we are publishing today the final rule that will lay out uniform security standards for driver's licenses and state identification cards. And let me tell you what the major features of the rule will be. First, under the rule, people seeking driver's licenses must provide to their State Department of Motor Vehicles documents that prove who they are and prove that they are here in this country legally. This is a major step forward in preventing illegal immigrants from getting driver's licenses. Second, Department of Motor Vehicle officers must verify that the documents they are being presented with are legitimate, and they have to take steps to protect their own operations and their own databases from identity theft and other corrupt activities. Third, licenses issued by states now must meet tamper-proof specific standards that will make it much harder to counterfeit or alter a secure driver's license. And finally, states have to work together to assure that individuals are not able to obtain driver's licenses from multiple states in an improper manner. Let me give you some concrete examples of how these new common sense standards are going to work. First, for far too long, people who came into this country under a lawful visa and then overstayed that visa were able to obtain driver's licenses in many jurisdictions that continued to be valid after the expiration date of the original visa. What this meant was people who overstayed their visas had a form of documentation that made it seem to the innocent observer that they were here in the country legally. Under today's rule, we're going to put a stop to that activity. By the end of 2009, if you illegally overstay your visa, you will not be able to get a real ID-compliant driver's license. Let me give you a second example. There remain a few states that, when presented with a Social Security number by an applicant for a driver's license, do not check to determine whether that number is genuine. As a result of today's new Real ID rule, those who create phony Social Security numbers will now risk getting caught at their DMV because our rule requires that the DMV check Social Security databases to make sure that the number presented is genuine and real. And finally, in the past, if you presented fraudulent documents to the DMV office while trying to get a license, you might be turned away, and then you could go down the road to the next DMV or to the next state and try again. Under today's rule, DMV employees are going to require that you take your photograph as the first step of the application process, as soon as you set foot inside the door. What that means is that if we discover, or DMV workers discover, that you have submitted fraudulent documents, you're not going to be able to try again down the road because we're going to have a record at the DMV of the fact that you tried and failed to get a license the first time. Now, these are very important and significant goals, but there are some burdens involved, obviously, in distributing a new kind of license. And many of the states, of course, have already begun to take steps to secure identification, but others expressed a concern about the business process and the cost of these measures and whether they were, in fact, doable within the time allotted and without undue expense and undue burden to the states. So we've addressed these concerns in a number of different ways. First, we have taken steps in the new rule, in response to an awful lot of comments, about 21,000, to simplify the business process, to give the states more flexibility in terms of the kind of security features that will satisfy our requirements, and to extend the period of enrollment for people over the age of 50 so as to allow the business process to work in a somewhat more orderly and a somewhat more extended fashion. The net result of these changes, which do not sacrifice the core security features of the new Real ID license, is that we have been able to reduce implementation costs to the states by approximately 3/4. And that's going to be with allowing them a greater flexibility for their own business processes. In order to do that, one major change that we're making for Americans 50 years or older is extending their enrollment deadline from December 2014 to December 2017. And so we built a series of milestones which the states can meet in order to remain in compliance with the law, and which will put them on what I would call a gentle but nevertheless expeditious glide path to getting the job done. What is the cost going to be? Well, at the end of the day, we estimate that the average actual cost for issuing a real ID license is at about $8 per license at the margin. And so if you're in a state that issues a four-year license, that means you're going to be paying a little bit more than $2 a year in order to have a license that validates your identity, proves that you are in the country legally, and is secure from being counterfeited or tampered with by identity thieves. I know I speak for most Americans when I say that $2 is a very small price to pay for increased confidence that you'll be safe when you get on an airplane or when you walk into a federal building, for confidence that your identity is not going to be stolen and misused by somebody else, for confidence that illegal immigrants are not going to be able to pretend to be Americans by using phony documentation. And that's why we think going forward with this rule is a fair balance between important security measures and the need to make sure we are cost-effective in what we do. Before I take questions, let me respond briefly to objections that I sometimes hear raised by civil libertarians about Real ID, particularly the argument that somehow Real ID is going to impair our privacy. I have to say that most of these objections are really grounded in misinformation, so let me clarify a number of things right now. We are not going to have a national database. Real ID does not require that states start to collect additional information from applicants that they have not already created. We are not going to wind up making this information available willy-nilly. In fact, the steps we are taking under Real ID will enhance and protect privacy rather than degrade and impair privacy. Let me begin by pointing out that among the things we're doing under Real ID is requiring that state motor vehicle agencies have in place background checks and security plans for their databases in terms of the motor vehicle information. Traditionally, again and again, we have seen corruption at motor vehicle agencies leading to people improperly disseminating personal information. These security plans and these background checks will actually minimize the risk that employees will improperly take that information and disseminate it. Second, we are not building a large database or collecting additional information. What we are doing is using the existing network of databases, using information already held and collected by state agencies and by the federal government, to make sure that people cannot present phony identification by checking that identification against the original database. So if somebody tries to present a phony passport and substitutes a picture of themselves for the real passport owner, by checking that passport against the database that we have at the Department of State with the passport page, we can see there's a difference in the photograph and we can detect a potential identity thief or other kind of con man. That, again, is a step forward in terms of privacy. So finally, we come to the core question. Is it somehow an invasion of privacy to require that when people present identification to come into a building or to get on an airplane, that that identification be genuine and valid? Now, I guess you could make the argument, I certainly wouldn't make it, and I doubt you're going to find many Americans who would make it, but I guess you could make the argument that you should have a right to get on an airplane without telling anybody who you are, and that it's wrong for us to be able to check a watch list to see whether Muhammad Atta, number two, is getting on an airplane. And if that's your position, then you're against all identification. You don't want people to identify themselves in any circumstance. But as I said, I don't think that makes sense, and I don't think the American people make sense. So given that we do have a general consensus that it is appropriate to ask people to identify themselves in certain circumstances, the question I have to ask is, what is the privacy argument for making it easy to forge that identification, or to impersonate somebody, or to lie about who you really are? I'm frankly still waiting to hear the ACLU or somebody else get up and explain why we are better off as a society if when someone presents a license to get on an airplane, they can pretend to be somebody else, or they can lie about their identity, or that it's good to be able to have illegal immigrants pretend to be American citizens by stealing the identity of somebody else, or by having a license that allows them to represent themselves as legal in their country. And if they can make the case and persuade people, then maybe people will push back against this rule. I think at the end of the day, there is no argument in favor of insecure identification. I think there is no argument in favor of making it easy for somebody to steal my identity and invade my privacy, because it's easy to fabricate a driver's license or another document. I think that anybody who looks at this in a fair-minded and objective way is going to say, what we are doing in Real ID is taking a major step forward in terms of protecting privacy, even as we protect security. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about the process. This is not, contrary to what some people say, just the federal government bigfooting itself on the states. As I said, we had a very lengthy and frankly what I would call an iterative process, a back and forth process with state legislators, governors, DMVs, and a whole host of interested people between the time we issued our original proposal and the final proposal that we're issuing today. We had a great deal of consultation, and if you look at the regulation that we have issued and compare it to the original proposed regulation, you will see some meaningful changes. So this is very much the product of a lot of listening, a lot of careful consideration, and frankly, taking on board some good ideas from the state and some of the other people, state and the other people who are interested in this. But I will also say there comes a point in time that all the discussion and analysis has to stop. We are now over 6 years from 9/11. We live every day with the problems of false identification. Simply kicking this problem down the road year after year after year for further discussion and further debate and further analysis is a time-tested Washington way of smothering any proposal with process. So I think we've given it a fair process. Some people probably think we've given it too much time. But I think the time has come to bite the bullet and get the kind of secure identification I am convinced the American public wants to have. And I'm prepared to defend this against criticism. I invite people, if they want, you know, if they want to raise privacy arguments or other arguments, send them into us. We'll put it on our website, and I'll answer them on our leadership blog. Because I think the time for smothering this important 9/11 Commission recommendation with endless process and discussion is over. So I'm delighted to say we're moving forward. We're expecting to work with the states, beginning the first stages of implementation. And as the years go by, the consequence of this is going to be a more secure form of identification which will serve both our homeland security and our individual concerns about personal privacy. And now I'm happy to take questions. Yes. I think you got to wait for the mic.
In fact, if you guys want to come and